Hi there, my name is Mubashra and this is Color Me PR Podcast. Join me for conversations with diverse women in communications who break the ceiling with what they can do. This podcast is all about being inspired and inspiring others. Welcome to our safe space. Hi, Charlene. Thank you so much for joining me on Color Me PR Podcast today. I hadn't shared this with you yet, but you are actually one of the first three names I had written down when I first thought about launching a podcast as who I'd like to have on. So this is really a long time coming. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. I have to say a big, huge apologies for it taking so long for you to get me on this show. There was no real reason that it could have taken me this long. So happy that we're finally doing this and that I could be here and talking to you. It's so relevant. It's so timely. Mm-hmm. People are so interested in it. Finally,
yes.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So wonderful that you've created a platform for yourself to kind of be able to talk about all of this. So good.
Thank you. So listeners, let me introduce you to our very special guest. Charlene Carrington is an award-winning communication strategist with over 12 years of experience advising executives, political leaders, and entrepreneurs on using strategic communications and content to build their brands. Charlene is also the founder and director of Content Strong Communications and the co-founder, committee chair, and director of events and awareness for the Abora Network, a not-for-profit working to elevate the profile of excellent Black communicators in public relations. She's a talented speaker and diversity advocate with a passion for sharing how our industry can be more inclusive. I am truly excited to have you on here today, and I think our listeners are in for a real treat. Communications is one of those fields where I feel like you can't always predict where people are coming into the industry from, whether it's education or where they've lived before. So I'd really love to start with getting a sense of how you came into the field of public relations and communications.
So I am one of those individuals that actually did go to school for communications, but I didn't start out in communications. So I went to my undergrad not really having a strong grasp of what public relations was necessarily. I started in my undergrad in international business, actually. Wow. And I was studying Japanese 8 hours a week with the intention of going overseas. Wow. And then doing something at the eventually pursuing like a law degree and then right. doing something with international business with international business and corporate law. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I quickly was like, this is not for me. And this is not for me because all of the kind of creative aspect, like the artistic side of me, I felt was really being ignored. I really valued the business side of things, right. but I really felt like what I was pursuing at the time missed the creative aspect of it. And I somehow ended up in communications as a result. Mm-hmm. So I did that in my undergrad, I did communications the rest of my undergrad. And then yeah. I went and did the postgrad at Humber College, also in mm-hmm. public relations. And then I got my first job in a boutique agency called the IPR Agency. And I was doing consulting and stuff and media relations right out of the gate for lifestyle and tech clients. And I hated it, to be quite honest.
And those are two very different sides.
Yeah, I know. Very two different sides. But you know what? I think I hated it because I was just pushing a product.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I felt like all the actual skills of actually making a change and making a difference and being kind of, you know, creative and thoughtful and, you know, really having the ability to create some kind of change, whether it wasn't a policy or so on, I wasn't right. getting to do. And then I ended up in government. And, you know, initially I really loved government. I was working specifically on communications for vulnerable populations. So I was mm-hmm. working in relation to women's equality and creating communications for sexual and domestic violence survivors and human trafficking survivors and Indigenous women. And, you know, I worked yeah. under several ministers and premiers, and I kind of felt really important about, I felt like the work I was doing was important.
Right.
But then there was a shift in kind of thinking in the way that communications was approached in government. And there were also definite roadblocks as well that I faced in government in terms of moving up into kind of the leadership positions that I wanted to be in. I'd kind of see, you know, my white male communicator counterparts who had these great connections, but virtually no management or tangible campaign experience, just kind of be plucked out of nowhere as directors. Wow. And they'd still be calling me like, how would you do this? How do you? And I was like, well, how come you got this opportunity? You don't know what you're doing. You're calling me. And how did you get this opportunity? And I didn't have, you know, the opportunity to kind of even explore some other internal positions that would kind of propel me into leadership. So I didn't love that.
Yeah.
And somewhere in the midst of doing all of that, I got my master's in communications management from McMaster. And my thesis, they call it a capstone, was specifically about studying Black women in public relations and what barriers to advancement there were for these women. And I think that has really shaped kind of the trajectory of my career since then.
Yeah.
And then I got pregnant and I really knew that government was not the environment for me, as I've just explained.
Yeah.
And I really knew I couldn't thrive there. So, you know, supported by my husband, he was kind of like, why are you doing this? So just start doing your own thing.
Yeah.
Make your own way.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, well, I can do that. So I really kind of leveraged my network and I jumped out on my own to see what would happen. And it's been, so far, it's been really, really, really amazing journey. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think about it all the time and I think about how much it's a story that I've heard too often already.
Right.
So many people aren't given the opportunity or aren't given the chance to really show themselves. Yeah. And they're fighting against this wall all the time.
Absolutely.
And then they say, you know what, I just have to go make an opportunity for myself. And they have to leave and go create something for themselves. So anyway, it's been positive for me thus far, but that's how I started.
No, it's really interesting how you've gone from like working with an agency to doing not-for-profit comms and government. And you got a bit of a taste of each of the different areas.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of courage and strength to go on your own. So I have to give you kudos for taking that step.
Thank you. I'm terrified. It's terrifying. Great.
Yeah.
It's
terrifying. That's basically how I respond to when people ask me about the podcast. Yeah. It's terrifying, but it's so worth it at the end of the day. Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned the master's program because I do a segment on the podcast called Boss Moments, where I share something perhaps not so known about my guest that I think deserves extra special recognition. And while the list is long with you, I think the one thing that I really wanted to share, and especially now that you've touched on it as well, is your experience with your master's program. So for those of you who don't know, Charlene presented the results of her groundbreaking study on the lived experiences of 21 Black women who work in public relations in Canada. And you landed on 3 recommendations at the end of your research, which I quickly want to share here because I just think that they're so important. Firstly, Black women need to be disruptors. Secondly, public relations associations need to be sculptors. And thirdly, organizations need to be nurturers. Now, I wish I could dedicate the entire episode to just these 3 points or even one of them because I think they deserve a proper conversation. But I'd love to just learn a little bit more about how you decided on this topic. Like, how did you get to that? And what was the research process like?
Oh, my goodness. What a great question. So hilariously enough, I started. So they kind of tell you at the beginning of the program, it's a 2.5-year program. They tell you at the beginning of the program, think about what you want to do this thesis study on. And I had no idea. I think I went back and forth a million and one times. Oh, maybe I'll do it in ethics or do it in reputation management. And it was the day before one of our very last classes before you're kind of sent off on your own to do your research.
Yeah.
And they were like, what's your idea? And I was like, I don't have any idea. And I think I was reading an article and something in the article struck me. And I kind of looked up around the classroom and I was like, I'm the only, and it was, of course, was not the first time it had occurred to me, but I was like, I am the only one of me in this classroom here. Like, how come I'm the only Black woman in this class? I know the cohort above us is 90% white male.
Wow.
And I know every workplace I've been in, there's only me for the majority of the time. It's only me and only me sitting around the table. Why is that?
Yeah.
And I said, why can't I do a study on that? And what was interesting about it is when I pitched it, a lot of the professors and the program director, I think he was a program director at the time. He was like, yeah, no one's done this. Like, this research doesn't exist in Canada. You should do it. I don't think I really understood how much of an impact it would have then and how much more of an impact it is having now.
Right.
That the conversation has shifted so drastically.
Right.
And I remember asking some of my respondents when I first started, like, will you be part of this study? I need to interview you, blah, blah, blah. And the first few people were like, you are so brave for doing this. And I was like, what? You are so brave for putting yourself out there and boldly saying, yeah, I'm a Black woman and I'm doing a study on Black women. And I was like, oh, that is so true. Because typically when you're in a work environment, you're especially for Black women, at least for me and many of the women I spoke to are telling me the same thing. You know, you're kind of taught that you have to tone down your authentic, your Blackness, quite frankly, because you need to fit in with the mainstream. Yeah. And all of a sudden I was saying, I'm not trying to tone anything down. I'm just trying to talk to us Black women and hear about the experience of Black women just like myself.
Yeah.
Just even going through that process was a bit of a shift mentally, I think, for me.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, I did that study I completed it in 2018. And certainly the shift, even my mental shift, and then of course our socioeconomic environment has shifted so greatly that we're all openly having these conversations now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we've really been able to see kind of the impact of doing that study. And we're seeing more and more of studies just like that occur. Yeah. When at the time I literally had zero Canadian data to pull on. Zero. Yeah.
So you think 2018 is like not that long ago, but even in 3 years, I feel like we've come a long way. So kudos to you for doing this at a time when nobody else was thinking about this. And I'm glad to hear you say the program director was also encouraging of the topic, because that was going to be my next question is, did you experience any kind of hesitancy or anyone kind of questioning whether or not you would get a good result out of this or whether it's a topic that should really be focused on?
No, and funny enough, I mean, that program director has actually given me and many others a platform, really more of a platform to be able to say these are some of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
He also was instrumental in you may have gone to it, the National Summit on Anti-Racism and Public Relations.
Yeah.
You know, we created this steering committee, which he essentially started because he created this platform. So he was my supervisor at the time. No one is doing this. No one has had this conversation in Canada. This is groundbreaking in Canada. No one's doing this. You have to do this. And then he was the next person with like, this is great. Well, let's see how much bigger we can make this. And he has, you know, he's a prolific white man in this journey of public relations. Everybody knows who he is. He knows everybody. He's, you know, kind of everywhere. He's involved in everything. And he was like, no. She's going to be up front here talking about this because she's done all this research and she needs to be talking about it. So
yeah.
Quite honestly, and I think I don't want to say that was a surprise to me because that's not actually true, but it always does feel a little bit surprising when you have someone like a Terry Flynn who all of a sudden is propelling you and trying to amplify your voice when, at least for me in my experience, I've had so many experiences that were completely the opposite of that from white men in leadership.
Absolutely.
So that was a big deal. It is still a big deal.
Absolutely. And I'm seeing that a lot as well, like especially in, I feel like, the agency world, we're seeing a lot of really great allies who hold a lot of power that are coming forward and really supporting this representation that we need. So absolutely, absolutely grateful for that. So one of the reasons why I personally admire you so much is because of how often I see you on the list of panelists and speakers for events, especially events that are focused on equity and inclusion in our industry. Mm. Constantly putting yourself out there is not an easy thing to do. And I'd love to hear how you personally found your confidence to speak up and use your voice as a woman of color.
Funny enough, I didn't initially have that confidence at all. I think I was kind of thrusted into it. You know, I have to admit, I felt silenced, quite frankly, in a lot of ways to not speak up, particularly early on in my career, you know, being a Black woman in the workplace and being the only one, as I mentioned, in the majority of the places I worked, you know, any sign of assertion or passion even. And as you can see, I talk with a lot of passion. I'm very, you know, animated, but any kind of sign of assertion had been seen as aggressive. And that really had very little to do with me and more to do with biases and perceptions of others. And I've really come to terms with that now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time I was, you know, that's not what I saw, right?
Yeah.
And in some ways, at least early on, you know, it was difficult for me to say, hey, I am a leader. Like, I do have these perspectives. I actually don't agree. And that's because I was always kind of fighting against that unconscious bias. And right. Like I said, I really do credit my master's program that I really started to appreciate my own voice and really speak louder, let's say, You know, there wasn't always opportunities for me, as I think I mentioned, particularly in government, but I was propelled to kind of find my own voice because of my master's thesis and that topic. And that certainly has become, you know, much more relevant in the past few years, as we mentioned. So, you know, my master's study really did give me a platform, but also gave me, you know, the confidence to say, well, I have all of this experience. Like, I've worked on these multi-million dollar campaigns and I've provided advice to 12 ministers and two premiers. And, you know, you know, it was really, and then I really still somehow needed all of these additional educational credentials in my back pocket for me to then really feel like it backed up my expertise in an undeniable way.
Yeah.
You know, there was another Black woman in communications who called on my research. That's Gail Strawn, who I now have co-founded the Abora Network with some other ladies. And she really called on me and kind of said, we have this platform through McMaster to kind of leverage your research and talk about the kinds of things and experiences that we as Black women, we as women of color in general, kind of go through in the industry. And you need to do it. Get up and do it. So like I said, it did not come naturally to me. It's still a thing that I'm always kind of fighting against, right?
Yeah, No, but I think that having that community of women who are experiencing the same kind of experiences in their professional networks, the same kind of challenges, who understand where you're coming from, it's so valuable to have that network of women to rely on. And I think that's part of why I really wanted to launch this podcast in the first place. Is because I find personally my confidence builds up by talking to other women of color and hearing about their journeys and learning about their experiences and even their struggles and having that team to push you forward. So definitely think that that's super valuable. Why do you think it's important for women of color to use their voices, especially now when we have this increased, you know, value that organizations are placing on diversity and inclusion? Because I've had many conversations, especially with a lot of junior communicators, about their hesitancy to talk about their diversity or talk about why that's valuable for them in their careers. But I do think it's important, and I'd love to hear why you think that's important as well, especially for women of color.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think, and this once again goes back to my experiences. I don't want to speak for a whole group of people, but, you know, I think we are inherently always fighting the stereotype, even though more people are now more aware that the stereotypes are limiting for some of us, and that, you know, people are still thinking about these stereotypes even unconsciously.
Yeah.
You know, we're still always inherently fighting some kind of stereotype. And, you know, if that's the case, I think we need as many of our voices as possible to really demonstrate that we're not monolithic, right? We all have something valuable, something dynamic, something different to offer.
Yeah.
And kind of besides the obvious human aspect of this argument, you know, I think about how much we can contribute to the businesses we serve and the publics we serve, you know, when we're really given the opportunity to share our perspectives. Right? I mean, how much our perspectives and our experiences can contribute to new learning and more authentic ways of reaching specific audiences and more effective ways of solving problems or addressing potential crises even before they've had the opportunity to become crises. Like, that's why we need to be able to share our stories, and our voices really need to be amplified because they've been muted for so long.
Exactly. Or I feel like a lot of the times they're setting themselves up for, like you said, a crisis.
Exactly.
And so what do you think that, you know, women of color can actually do to leverage their skills and their experiences to put themselves out there and really grab at those opportunities to be a leader? Because you, like you mentioned, you know, you didn't right out of the gate feel like you were a leader qualified to be speaking. I feel like that all the time as well, even with the podcast, right? Like, who am I to be talking about so-and-so topic? But what do you think that we can really do to put ourselves out there?
Yeah, that's tough. You know, I think, I hate to say this because it means more work for us, but I think we have to be a little bit more creative than everyone else, right? Like, I think we really need to identify a need in our organizations and really figure out, like, how you can address or deliver on that specific need just a little bit differently than your counterparts.
Yeah.
And that may be, you know, like leveraging some experience you've had or some course you've taken or your lived experience, for example. And really find the right people to talk to about why and how your approach to that need will be just a little bit different, just a little bit more effective. And that, I think, will set you apart. You know, if you're in an environment where leadership opportunities, like was the case for me, leadership opportunities just aren't coming directly to you. You know, opportunities, no matter how primed you are just flat out not coming your way. You really have to approach it a little differently. And sometimes that means leaving where you are and finding somewhere else with a need, somewhere else where you can thrive. And in some other cases, it's about really finding the right person to leverage, right? The right person that you can whisper in the ear of and say, you know, I have a great idea. Like, I know this is a problem area and I'm primed to take it on. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, you've started some volunteer internal committee or you're part of something outside of your job, you know, but find something that can demonstrate that you're already doing what they need you to do in some capacity. And that's why I started at the beginning by saying this is tough because it's extra work, right? Yeah. And it's tiring because so many non-racialized counterparts that seemingly just get things with the people they know.
Yeah.
And of course we hope they're actually qualified, at least somewhat, right? But they're getting these opportunities because of the rooms that they're in. So, you know, what I'm saying is we really have to kind of find a way to get in a room with someone and sell, you know, how or why you have the expertise to solve the problem that they may have. And it's really not an easy thing to do. And I actually think it may require a lot more one-on-one private conversations to really figure out who you need to talk to that can help showcase your skills and help propel you into leadership. And often it's, you know, one person who may somehow end up in a room with C-suite members of your organizations. And that one person will remember like a wonderful conversation you had with them where you shared, you know, an amazing idea or some of your background, your experience, your expertise. And that one person will be the one to sponsor you and propel you into leadership, right?
Absolutely. Like finding a champion.
Exactly.
You know, I say this a lot, but I think it also comes down to just that moment of confidence, right? We all have that self-doubt in the back of our mind. We have that imposter syndrome. We have that hesitancy to ask for sometimes what we know we rightfully deserve. But more often than not, by at least putting it out there, you'll see some positive results. You know, even if you're not getting what you're asking for at the time, I think at least putting it out there, again, puts you at the forefront of their mind, of whoever you're making that ask to. And so having that moment of courage, of confidence, to just try and to ask and try to take that opportunity.
And it's a tough thing to do because I don't think, and like I was mentioning before, like we come from these environments where we were told not to talk about it. We were told to sit down and be quiet and do what you need to do. So, you know, put your head down and do the work hard. But it you know, that's a perspective that, for example, our white male counterparts flat out don't have. They would be the first people to raise their hand and say, hey, I want to do this and I want to make $20,000 more or whatever doing it, period. And that's almost a mental shift that I think we need to make to put ourselves out there exactly like you said and say, hey, actually, I can do this. I have more experience and expertise over here in this exact thing. Mm-hmm. I would also like $20,000, $50,000, whatever more to do it. Thank you. And you'll actually see results, period.
Exactly.
Right.
And hey, listeners, if you're hesitant at all, Charlene and I will hype you up. So just reach out.
Happy to be your hype man. Happy.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much. And before we sort of wrap up the episode, I just want to ask if there's one key message that you could leave with our listeners today, what would it be?
I think I have two.
Please, by all means.
The first one, if you're a woman of color, find a way to be visible. And that's, you know, you mentioned it as one of my recommendations at the end of my thesis. Find a way to be visible. Visible doing what you do best and showcasing your expertise. I mean, this podcast is a perfect, perfect example of that. If no one's going to give you a platform or an avenue to demonstrate what you can do, pick yourself up and go make those opportunities for yourself as much as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Be out there being seen, doing what you do, doing you, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I understand that's a hard ask for a lot of people. Like there are resource limitations, there are caregiving responsibilities, there are numerous other reasons, you know, why that's difficult for many of us, but I think it's really critical to build legitimacy when we're operating in a system that flat out wasn't created necessarily for us to succeed, right? So we have to find ways to succeed beyond the system and then reinsert ourselves into it. So that's the first thing I would say is just find a way to be as visible as you possibly can be. And the second thing I'd say is kind of be primed to help somebody else, right? Like if you're in a workplace and you're the only woman of color in that workplace, and then a next woman of color comes in, homegirl is not your competition. Yeah. And this goes for men and women of color as well, right? It's not just women of color, it's men of color as well, right? But
yeah,
there can be, and there should be more than one of us. Right? Mm-hmm. We have this opportunity to kind of sponsor the good work of other communicators of color, bring them up as much as you can, mention them and their good work, go out to coffee with them, mentor them or be mentored by them, share your experiences, share your resources, share mm-hmm. your thinking, your thoughts, your expertise, whatever, build each other up. You know, and I think that was really the foundation of why myself and the four other Black communicators that I talked about started the Abora Network. It was really founded on that belief that we need to help each other rise. Like that's the whole,
yeah.
the whole point. We need nobody else. Yeah. It's not going to drop in our laps. We need to help each other rise.
I absolutely love that. And it's basically one of the slogans for the podcast as well, as communicate kindness. And again, be inspired and inspire others. I know you see it on my background there.
Yes, I do. Love it.
I think that we have so much more to gain from supporting each other and lifting each other up than shying away from what brings us together, I guess. So thank you for that.
Exactly.
I'm really glad you shared both, because we needed to hear both of them.
Okay, good.
Again, thank you so much for joining me on Color Me PR podcast today and for sharing your journey, your experiences, and your insight on equity and inclusion in the communications industry. I'll be sure to drop your social media handles in the episode description. So listeners, make sure to check out all of the amazing work that Charlene is doing.
I have to say to you, just thank you so much for having me. What an important conversation you're having with me, with many others like us in this industry. Have me on again at some point. Like I'd love to chat with you. It's so critical, and I think people really learn a lot from it.
Yeah, I'm actually really appreciative, because my listeners are not just women of color. They're people from all different backgrounds, genders, and so I get a lot of amazing feedback from people who you wouldn't think find ways to connect with you with the conversations. So thank you so much for your encouragement. It means so much more than you can know. Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to sharing this episode with our listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Color Me PR podcast. I hope this conversation helped enlighten and inspire you about the value of diversity and inclusion in PR. If you're interested in keeping the conversation going, please subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and follow at Color Me PR on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn for updates. Thank you for tuning in, and I look forward to our next conversation.